something from yesterday, not yesterday's class, but the last. Okay, we'll start with an easier question. What book were we reading? What canto? What year is it? I'll give you a hint. Yes, I know some devotees don't need even need hints. How many years? Approximately. I mean, a long time. He was fighting and fighting. And why was he fighting for the demigods? It's an important point, as will come out later. Why was he fighting on the side of the demigods? Why didn't they ask you and me? Why did they ask Muchukunda? He was pious. He was a warrior, but not only a warrior, but extraordinarily powerful. Just imagine how powerful he was, that the demigods requested him. They felt that they needed him to defeat the Asuras. And then, when did they decide his help wasn't necessary anymore? When Kartikeya, whose other name is Skanda, was born, who was the general commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the demigods. So Muchukunda was required, as long as Kartikeya was Skanda. So just see how powerful he was. And as soon as Skanda was born, then the position was filled in another way, and he wasn't required anymore. So he was so extremely powerful. Maybe someone could just ask. Yes, if you could move onto the other side of the field. If you would kindly move to the other side of the field or something for a little while, perhaps 4 hours. Anyone remember anything else? Because it was a while ago, we should go through this, more or less the rest of the early part of the pastime, to bring our mind up to date.
Didn't sleep much, but
yeah. So on one hand, we can think that was a very peculiar benediction to ask for. But when one is really, really tired, then one can understand such a benediction. Because all you want to do is go to sleep and you don't care about anything else. Take rest. And as Prabhu was pointing out, it's quite funny in one sense that it was really to ward off Indra from them asking him again to help. He had done his part. Yeah. Anything else? So that's how Muchukunda ended up resting in the cave. And then what happened?
So
that's one way to look at it, that he was untouchable and therefore Krishna had to kill him without touching him. But also, because he could have used, like Balaram, later on he'll kill Rama Harshansutta without touching him. How? With kusagrass. So since he's so intelligent, he could think of another way to kill him. But why? But he was a kshatriya.
Yes.
And kshatriyas, they are very, very honorable and proud, and they won't fight lessers. So for him, for Krishna to fight, in the mood of a kshatriya, to fight someone who was outside of the Vedic system completely, and not a kshatriya, would have been beneath him. It's like if it's like a little boy comes in and hits an adult, a little boy. So it's not proper for the adult to retaliate, because he's little, he's insignificant. So That's also. That was built by whom?
It's built by Vishwakarma.
And they just woke up, and there they were.
Yeah, everybody.
Quite wonderful.
Was
in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Also.
And, in this battle with Jaya Sampa, so he exhibited two of these qualities. And also then.
Wait, no, you can't get too many and alsos. We have to let someone else say an also. Anyone remember anything else? Yeah. And then Krishna walked back. When Kalyanvana attacked, Krishna just walked very calmly from Mathura. And Kalyanvana tried to capture him. But Krishna always remained just out of reach, because it is not so easy to catch Krishna, to capture Krishna, although even Mother Yasoda had a difficult time to capture Krishna. And then Krishna walked into a cave, and Kalyanvana saw a figure lying there, and after all, he was a Yavana. He wasn't a very cultured person. So what did he immediately do when he saw the sleeping figure? Yes, so a Kshatriya wouldn't do that. Yavana does things like that. And what did that sleeping figure do? He woke up, he looked at Kalyanvana, and what happened? He burnt into ashes. Who burnt him into ashes? Matsukunda's glance. Okay. Now we will begin 22-35, or rather to the end of the chapter and onward. So 22. After the Yavana was burnt to ashes, so Krishna did it in such a wonderful way. That's something that is wonderful, because when Krishna wants to do something, he has his own ways of doing it, and no one can predict in advance how the thing will happen. But we know when Krishna wants something, either this way or that way, it will occur. So that Kalyanvana was killed, and how was he born? Who was this Kalyanvana? Anyone remember that? Who was his father?
Gargamuni.
Gargacharya, who was punishing the Yadu dynasty for laughing at him. He caused fear in them. Because laughing, when you're afraid, it's very difficult to laugh. So he was also very clever in stopping letting them pay, because he was their priest. He was their spiritual master. He even performed the name-giving ceremony for Krishna. Very improper. Acting like Yavanas, uncultured. So after the Yavana was burned to ashes, the Supreme Lord, chief of the Satvatas, revealed himself to the wise Mutsukunda. As he gazed at the Lord, he had been asleep for so long, and then he woke up, and as the fruit of the benediction of the demigods, Kalyanvana was killed. But then he looked, and remember, he was in the dark, meaning that he was in the cave. And he looked and he saw that he looked at Krishna, who was in the cave, and King Mutsukunda saw that he was dark blue like a cloud. He had four arms and he wore a yellow silk garment. On his chest he bore the Shivat's mark, and on his neck the brilliantly glowing Kastuba gem. Adorned with the Vaijayanti garland, the Lord displayed his handsome, peaceful face, no anxiety, which attracts the eyes of all mankind with its shark-shaped earrings, makara, an affectionately smiling glance. So he saw this wonderful person in front of him who was adorned as the Supreme Lord is adorned. And the beauty of his youthful form was unexcelled. What does that mean? The beauty of his form was unexcelled. What does that mean? Excuse me? Specifically in beauty. So there was no, if someone can jump this high, then to excel that person in jumping means to jump higher, go beyond what he can do. But the Lord's beauty that he exhibited to Muchukunda, there was no beauty beyond his beauty. How beautiful is that? Unlimited beauty. That's what Krishna possesses. And not only that, he had an affectionate and smiling glance. There are different types of glances. Glance means his eyes. And the smiling, of course, is his mouth. But there's different types of smiles. If you've just defeated your enemy in battle and you're just about to kill him after a long, hard battle, you might smile. The victor might smile to see the agony of his enemy. But this smile was affectionate, full of affection, because Muchukunda was very wise and he was a devotee. He moved with the nobility of an angry lion, and the highly intelligent king was overwhelmed by the Lord's effulgence, which showed him to be invincible. What does invincible mean?
Invisible?
A good guess, but the wrong word.
Defeatable.
And what showed him to be undefeatable? His effulgence. Because effulgence means his power. His personal power was so great. His effulgence, the light coming from his body, was so powerful and so great, he was undefeatable. And yet, he had used Muchukunda to defeat this Kaliyavana and kill him. And Muchukunda had just opened his eyes in the darkness of the cave, and look what he saw, an effulgent person. So that it's difficult when you're in the dark to see something very bright. So the effulgence of Krishna was amazing for Muchukunda to see. Okay, without looking, who remembers something about the description of Krishna that was given?
Vaijayanti, very effulgent, invincible, unexcelled beauty.
And his?
His?
Glance.
Yeah. He wore a silk garment, a yellow silk garment.
Yes.
And forearmed. He was forearmed.
He was a forearm form, too. Very interesting. What else? What else? What else? What else? Someone else? What else? Someone else? What else? Someone else? Smile. That was? What was the nature of his smile?
Affectionate.
Affectionate smile.
Very peaceful.
Very peaceful. If you're invincible, it's easier to be peaceful. He was handsome, peaceful face, which attracts the eyes of all mankind. That means men, women, everyone. He was wearing his garland, Kastuba gem, which represents all living entities, Srivats mark, which represents Lakshmi, opulence. And his complexion was blue like a cloud. We'll just read a little of the comment, the purport. Srila Jiva Goswami mentions the word Shankitaha, having some doubt, because he, Muchakunda, expressing his uncertainty, Muchakunda hesitantly questioned Lord Krishna as follows. So what was he uncertain about? Who this person was? He had an idea of who he was, but he wasn't sure. Srila Jiva Goswami mentions that the word Sankitaha, having some doubt, indicates that Muchakunda was thinking, is this indeed the Supreme Lord? Was it indeed the Supreme Lord? Yeah. Indeed, yes indeed, it was the Supreme Lord himself. Because it was the last thing, if you think, just think about the sequence. He had fought the demigods, he was so tired, he went to sleep, he did not want to be awakened, and someone kicked him. And if you're sleeping and someone kicks you, I don't know if you've ever been in that situation, kicks you awake, what is your mood like? Yes. That's a little warning. When Mataji is resting, make sure she's not kicked. So you're so angry, it's just natural. So he was so angry, and he burnt to ashes this Kali oven, and then he saw before him this effulgent, handsome, peaceful, all-powerful person, quite contrary to his anger. So there are some verses here that are Muchakunda's words. Who are you who have come to this mountain cave in the forest, having walked on the thorny ground with feet as soft as lotus petals? He even saw the soft lotus feet of the Lord. Perhaps you are the potency of all potent beings. Or maybe you are the powerful god of fire, or the sun god, the moon god, the king of heaven, or the ruling demigod of some other planet. I think, but he said, perhaps, but this is what he thinks. Manye tvam deva devanam trayanam purushar shabam yad badase guhadvantam pradipa prabhaya yata. I think that you are the Supreme Personality amongst the three chief gods. Since you drive away the darkness of this cave as a lamp dispels darkness with its light. So simultaneously as the darkness of the cave in which Muchakunda had slept, since as the darkness was driven away, similarly all the darkness, the ignorance in the heart is driven away by having the Shakshat Darshan, or seeing the Lord directly. What is the ignorance in the heart? It's our all everything born of false ego. All the allurements, all the traps born of false ego. And then when all that is gone, all that ignorance is gone, one is established in one's actual relationship with Krishna. I am your servant. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that with his effulgence, Lord Krishna dispelled not only the darkness of the mountain cave, but also the darkness in Muchakunda's heart. In Sanskrit, the heart is sometimes metaphorically referred to as a guha, a cavern, or a cave, a deep and secret place. 30. O best amongst men, because he's thinking that he is the Lord, he's understanding he's the Lord, so he perceives him as the best amongst men of persons. If you like, please truly describe your birth activities and lineage to us who are eager to hear. Because he can't order him, because he said he's the best. You can only order someone who is below you in position. So since Krishna is the best of all persons, he can only be requested, not ordered. So this is very much describing the way of approaching the Lord, isn't it? We could only request to know something about him, that he reveals something about himself to us. And Muchukunda's qualification too, kata yatam yadi rochitam, if it pleases you, do this. But he himself was eager to hear, as the translation indicates. Please reveal something about yourself, because we can't understand by our speculative mind, by the power of our intelligence, we cannot understand much about the Lord. We can understand that he's a supreme being, but as far as his characteristics, his lineage, his activities, birth, that has to be a revelation coming down from above. So when the Supreme Lord descends to this world, purport, he certainly becomes Narapungava, the most eminent member of the human society. Of course, the Lord is not actually a human being, and Mukunda's question will lead to a clarification of this point, a human being meaning a material individual, like a human, earthly being. Thus the term Shushushatam to us who are sincerely eager to hear indicates that Muchukunda is inquiring in a noble way for his own and others' benefit. Vayam te purusha vyagra aishvaka chatravandava Muchukunda iti prokto yovanasvatmaja prabhu. And then he, because it's when you introduce, when you approach a person in a superior position, it's polite to introduce yourself first. So he hasn't done that as of yet, so now he's going to introduce himself. Vayam tu purusha vyagra, O tiger, vyagra, O tiger, amongst men, purusha vyagra. We, on the other hand, aitshvaka, we are descendants of Ikshaku, Chatrabandava. Chatru, we are like family members of Kshatriyas. We're not actually Kshatriyas. In other words, he's taking a very humble position in front of the Lord, which is always a wise thing. Muchukunda iti prokta, Muchukunda called out, Yavanasva Atmaja Prabhu. I am the son of Yavanasva. He introduced himself first. Translation. O tiger among men, we belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshaku. My name is Muchukunda, my lord, and I am the son of Yovanasva. We'll read the short comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Though Muchukunda indicated his own position, he noted Krishna's silence. Therefore, he decided to introduce himself, noting his good qualifications by saying he was a low-class Kshatriya. Muchukunda intended to show his humility and thus his good quality. And then 32, more about himself. I was fatigued after remaining awake for a long time, and my senses were overwhelmed by sleep. Thus I slept comfortably here in this solitary place until just now someone woke me. The man who woke me was burned to ashes by the reaction of his sins. Just then, I saw you, possessing a glorious appearance and the power to chastise your enemies. Purport. Kaliyavan had declared himself the enemy of Sri Krishna and the Yadu dynasty. Through Muchukunda, Sri Krishna destroyed the opposition of that foolish barbarian. So Krishna did it, as he did many times. He killed others using other means than doing it himself. So many demons were killed by Baladev. But Krishna is the Sarvakarana Karanam. 34. Your unbearably brilliant effulgence overwhelms our strength, and thus we cannot fix our gaze upon you. O exalted one, you are to be honored by all embodied beings. Thus addressed by the King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, origin of all creation, smiled and then replied to him in a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds. Okay. What did he ask him? Yes, who are you? What were the details, huh? Not directly. But what specifically did he ask him? In text. Your birth, text 30. Your activity is, your lineage, where you come from, your activities, your birth, how were you born. Let's see how Krishna answers. But he's asking who you are, you, and he was eager to hear about the Lord. And then Krishna begins. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Janma Karma Bidanani Shanti Me Anga Sahasrasha Nashaktyante Anusankyatum Anantatvat Mayapihi. My dear friend, addressing him affectionately, I have taken thousands of births. So he's answering the question about his birth. He's inquired about his birth. So, where were you born? I have taken thousands of births. Which one do you want to hear about? I've lived thousands of lives and accepted thousands of names. In fact, my births, activities, and names are limitless, and thus, even I cannot count them. So he's confirming that he is indeed the Supreme Lord. After many lifetimes, someone might count the dust particles on the earth, but no one can ever finish counting my qualities, my activities, names, and births. So does this verse sound at all familiar? And there is a prayer by Lord Brahma, very similar to this. In the what chapter are the prayers of Lord Brahma? 14. So begin the seventh verse. Lord Brahma says, in time, learned philosophers. Who is Lord Brahma speaking to? He's speaking to Krishna, a very, very little boy with some food in his left hand as he's wandering in the forest of Braja looking for his stolen boys and calves. So Brahma recognizes that he's the unlimited Supreme Lord. He's just seen universes and Narayans coming from and entering his body. He's seen every living entity worship Krishna. He's seen the Lord covered with tulsi leaves from the tip of his toes to the top of his head. And he says, in time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth. All the atoms of the earth. Or all the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, and that's a lot of shining molecules, or the stars and the other luminaries, the other glowing orbs. But amongst these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities. So even if one could do that, even if one was capable of counting all the molecules, shining molecules emanating from the sun, and all the atoms that the earth is composed of, and of course no one can do that, count them. But even if one was able to do that, he would not be able to enumerate or count the wonderful unlimited qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what Brahma said. And Krishna is hereby confirming in his own words that what Brahma says is indeed correct. No one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births. O King, the greatest sages enumerate my births and activities, which take place throughout the three phases of time. What are the three phases of time? Yes, very good. But they do not reach the end of them. So his activities occur in all three phases of time. Nevertheless, O friend, I will tell you about my current birth, name, and activities. Kindly hear. Some time ago, Lord Brahma requested me to protect religious principles and destroy the demons who were burdening the earth. Thus I descended in the Yadu dynasty in the home of Anakadanduri. Indeed, because I am the son of Vasudev, people call me Vasudev. I have killed Kalanemi, reborn as Kamsa. This is Krishna's activities in this birth, as well as Pralamba and other enemies of the pious. And now, O King, this barbarian has been burnt to ashes by your piercing glance. Srila Sridhar Swami comments on this verse, as Muthukunda had said, he has been killed by me through your piercing glance. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, because he was a devotee in the past, I have personally come to this cave to show you my mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees. So why did Krishna go to the cave? Was it to have Kalayavana killed because he was an untouchable Yavana, unsuitable for a Kshatriya to fight? And if we remember, we can't remember it quite yet, unless we've already read it, which most all of us have probably, in the 72nd chapter of this canto, who gets killed? I think that's 76, 77. Or maybe it's 62. That's 74. We're getting closer. 72? Jarasandha, yes. So who approached Jarasandha to fight? Krishna, Bhim, and Arjun. So Jarasandha said, I won't fight, and they begged charity as Brahmins. We are Brahmins, we are begging you charity. He understood that they were not Brahmins, but because they had demeaned themselves, because they are Kshatriyas, and Kshatriyas never beg charity, they take what they want if they want it, they don't beg anyone. Bhim killed so many Yakshas because they said, you have to ask permission to take these lotus flowers, Sahasra. Petal lotus flowers from the garden of Kuvera, the lake of Kuvera, because he wouldn't ask anyone. I don't beg anyone. I am a Kshatriya. It's a spirit, a mood. So Jarasandha said, I won't fight with Krishna because? Coward? Is that? Or a coward or a cowherd? Both, maybe. And why wouldn't he fight with Arjuna?
He's younger.
Younger. So this is the Kshatriya spirit. They'd only fight with equals. So therefore Krishna wouldn't fight with a Yavana. It was beneath him. But he decided to fight with Bhim. So he's a devotee. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I've personally come to this cave to show you mercy. Now, what's interesting about that? Or can you think of something interesting about that? Okay, that was the question we were actually asking. Krishna was doing two things at once. But what's interesting about that too? Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I've personally come to this cave to show you mercy. Huh? It took time, yes, exactly. And how long? Because he had been sleeping a very long time, too. It took its time. And Krishna is saying, you repeatedly prayed to me. Because of this, it was your desire, not just a passing whimsical desire, but again and again. In other words, the desire was deep within his heart. Because of that, long ago, I have come to this cave personally. And why have I done this? Because Krishna is affectionately inclined to my devotees. But Krishna is the boss. Again, we can't order Krishna. We can pray to him, we can request him. But ultimately what he does is his, what he wants to do. And why has he done it? Out of his affection for his devotees. Bhakta Vatsala. Tyavyaham Bhakta Vatsala. Because Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala. So do we really accept that Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala? We should understand this, and then we should ask within the cave of our heart, do we really accept that Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala? And the other question is, well, maybe he's Bhakta Vatsala, but I'm not Bhakta. Then what? And what's the answer to that? The then what? From the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, the words of Lord Narayan himself, that not only am I dear to my devotees, aham bhakta paradino, and controlled by my devotees, but even the devotees of my devotees are dear to me. So if we can't become, if we're not, don't consider ourselves devotees, at least we have to become devotees of devotees. Purport. It is apparent from this verse that Muchakunda was a devotee of the Supreme Lord. He had prayed for the Lord's association, and now, after some time, Sri Krishna granted his fervent request. What does fervent mean?
Next.
Huh? Yes, ardent. Intense, fervent, strong, powerful request. In other words, it wasn't just a weak desire, but something very strong, very intense and strong. So then Krishna says to him, now I've come before you, and my coming before you should not, it should be used for your best benefit. And then in 43, now choose some benediction for me, O saintly king. I will fulfill all your desires. One who has satisfied me need never again lament. Very interesting. Because let's imagine if all, say just in the last 2 days, if someone had noted down all the things we desired and lamented about that we didn't have, and then suddenly Krishna, because of our sincere prayers of long ago, he appeared before us and said, now I am going to satisfy everything that you lamented about and everything that you desired. Now, would we be happy with that? Notice no one raised their hand to respond to that one because they didn't want a public answer. I will fulfill all your desires. One who has satisfied me need never again lament. Purport. We'll read the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to text 43. We lament when we feel incomplete, when we have lost something for which we fail, or when we fail to achieve something desirable. In this verse, Krishna reassures his devotee, the person who has satisfied me does not have to lament. The benedictions given by others are perishable, and therefore the benefactor laments when the boon disappears. But for one who surrenders to me, I give benedictions which are imperishable, and therefore he need not lament. Now, 44. So who has just spoken?
Krishna.
Who spoke first? Mujjukunda. He said, please tell me about your birth and activities. And Krishna spoke very briefly about his birth and activities. To have spoken extensively about them would have taken at least the Srimad Bhagavatam, because that's what the Srimad Bhagavatam does. Speaks about Krishna's birth and activities in so many different incarnations. And then Krishna answered very briefly. He killed, the demigods had requested him to come. He had killed Kamsa, Kalanemi in previous birth, and also which demon did he also kill that he mentioned?
Pralambasura.
Interesting that he, because Krishna killed so many demons. But he just mentioned Pralambasura. And actually Krishna didn't kill Pralambasura. Balaram killed Pralambasura. So just as Balaram, Krishna killed Pralambasura through Balaram, Krishna killed Kaliyavana through Mujjukunda. So now Mujjukunda's going, now he's clearly, he's asked, who are you? And he understands he's the Supreme Lord. Now, in some prayers, how many prayers? 45 to 52. No, excuse me, 45 to 57. So 13 prayers. He's going to offer some words to Krishna, some prayers. So there's different parts of these prayers, or his set of in the 13 verses. And the first, he's going to speak about his foolish position, and the foolish position of one who wants power in this world, and the foolish position of everyone in this world. What does it mean to be foolish? It means to do something, huh?
Misplacing opportunity.
Okay, that's a good definition of it. What else does it mean to be foolish?
Thinking yourself as a doer.
Okay. What else does it mean to be foolish?
Without intelligence.
Yes. Act without intelligence, or act enthusiastically for something that is going to bring a terrible result. And then, so he's going to explain his foolishness, the foolishness of kings, or someone trying to control and be the lord of something in this world, and all that entails, and then basically the foolishness of every living entity. And then he's going to make a request in the second. He's going to make a request of Krishna, because Krishna has asked him, what do you want for me? What benediction do you want? Krishna is known as Varada, the giver of all benedictions. Varan, benediction, Vishivnya. Just choose a benediction, Raja, Rishi, or saintly king. Everything that is desirable, I will give you. I can give you whatever you want. It's a dangerous request, isn't it? Especially if we're not on our best behavior, or if we just woke up in the morning, like Mujjukunda. Let the world be devoid of everyone else. I don't want to be bothered anymore. So anyway, here's his prayers in its different parts. So read the first part, 45 to 52. Sri Mujjukunda said, we'll read all the verses first. Sri Mujjukunda said, O Lord, the people of this world, both men and women, are bewildered by your illusory energy. Unaware of their real benefit, they do not worship you, but instead they seek their happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are actually sources of misery. That person has an impure mind who, despite having somehow or other automatically attained the rare and high evolved human form of life, Such a person does not worship your lotus feet. He has an impure mind. Like an animal that has fallen into a blind well, a covered well, such a person has fallen into the darkness of a material home. I've wasted all this time, O unconquerable one, becoming more and more intoxicated by my domain and opulence as an earthly king, misidentifying the mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, treasury, and land. I suffered endless anxiety. Summing up material life and its foolishness. And more about it, the actions of one who is illusioned by the illusory energy, bewildered by it, impure intelligence. With deep arrogance, I took myself to be the body, which is a material object like a pot or a wall. Thinking myself a god amongst men, I traveled the earth surrounded by my charioteers, elephants, cavalry, foot soldiers, generals, disregarding you in my deluding pride. A man obsessed with thoughts of what he thinks needs to be done, intensely greedy and delighting in sense enjoyment, is suddenly confronted by you, who are ever alert, like a hungry snake licking its fangs before a mouse. You appear before him as death. The body that at first rides high on fierce elephants or chariots, adorned with gold, and is known by the name of king, is later, by your invincible power of time, called feces, worms, or ashes. Having conquered the entire circle of directions and being thus free of conflict, a man sits, the king has conquered. A man sits on a splendid throne, receiving praise from leaders who were once his equals. He has defeated them, and they are forced to praise him because he is the emperor. But when he enters the women's chambers, where sex pleasure is found, he is led about like a pet animal, O Lord. So he's defining foolishness. A king who desires even greater power than he already has strictly performs his duties, carefully practicing austerities and foregoing sense enjoyment. But he whose urges are so rampant, thinking I am independent and supreme, cannot attain happiness. So he's describing there in that first section of his prayers the foolish situation of a materialistic person, be he a powerful king or a lesser king, Ishwaraham Mahambhugi, possessing the consciousness that characterizes false ego. So 45. O Lord, Muchakunda prays. He describes his foolish position. Both men and women, the people of this world, both men and women, are bewildered by your illusory energy. Unaware of their real benefit, they do not worship you, but instead seek happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are actually sources of misery. Purport. Muchakunda immediately makes it clear that he's not going to ask the Lord for material blessings. He has advanced spiritually far beyond those who tried to exploit religion for all kinds of material benefits. Artha means value, and the negation of this word, anartha, means that which is valueless or useless. Thus the term anartha drik indicates those whose vision is focused on valueless things, their anarthas, thinking that they're full of value, who have not understood what actual artha or value is. All that glitters is not gold. And Muchakunda here emphatically states that we should not ruin our spiritual chances by entangling ourselves in the fool's gold of bodily relationships. We are meant to love the Lord. The purport or comment of Srila Sridhar Swami to text 45. Only devotion for you is actually hard to obtain. And on the other hand, material objects of desires are insignificant. not worthy being chosen as benedictions. With this idea in mind, he elaborates on the material life of non-devotees in the 8 verses 45 to 52. More by Srila Swami on this. O Lord, specifically, that was on the overview of what these 8 verses are, on the materialistic life of non-devotees, because material desires Muchakunda has deemed insignificant, and he won't ask that of the Lord for as benedictions, because the Lord has just said, give me what you want. So now on this specific verse, O Lord, both woman and man, both categories of these persons are bewildered by your maya. Therefore they are anartha drik, meaning that their vision is directed towards anartha or material existence, or else they do not see you, who are yourself the supreme artha, the supreme, what does artha mean?
Value.
That which is of the greatest value. Therefore they do not worship you, but rather cheating one another with the desire for happiness, they become entangled in those things from which misery arises, namely their homes. And the 46th verse. That person has an impure mind who, despite having somehow or another automatically attained the rare and highly evolved human form of life, does not worship your lotus feet. Like an animal that has fallen into a blind well, such a person has fallen into the darkness of a material home. In other words, he's really strongly criticizing the materialists who consider home and family everything, and their consciousness, their mind, their intelligence is just focused on this in a very contracted or even an expanded greater family way, even if their consciousness is even focused on the greatest family, like the country or something like that. It is, and due to that, they neglect to worship the Supreme Lord, that is considered impure mind, because dolabam manusya janma tarapa dhruva martadam, that human life is meant for something very special. So purport. Our real home is in the kingdom of God. Despite our tenacious determination to remain in our material home, death will rudely eject us from the theater of material affairs. To stay at home is not bad, nor is it bad to devote ourselves to our loved ones. But we must understand that our real home is eternal in the spiritual kingdom. The word ayatnataha indicates that human life has been automatically awarded to us. We have not constructed our human bodies, and therefore we should not foolishly claim this body is mine. The human form is a gift of God and should be used to achieve the perfection of God consciousness. One who does not understand this is asanmati, possessed of dull, mundane intelligence. And also it is also a gift of God because we have unlimited karma. Unlimited karma, just like the Vidyadhara that we read of, who was touched by the lotus feet of whom and gave up his snake body. Yes, and what was his name? Does anyone remember his name? Sudarshan. Later in the chapter, Sakachuda was fixed. He was given the full treatment by Krishna. But he had unlimited karma, good karma. Oh no, that was King Riga, excuse me. That was King Riga. He had practically unlimited good karma, but he had a fault. So whether we get the result of our fault or the good, or what mixture we get, because we have so much unlimited karma for thousands of births, millions of births, that is up to the super soul, that is up to Krishna. So if we have a human life, it is always a gift. So we should use that human life correctly for the things that only human beings can do, the higher intelligence, expanded consciousness. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, Furthermore, material sense gratification is obtainable even amongst the hogs and so on, whereas worship of the Supreme Lord cannot be had except for in a human birth. Thus, if after obtaining the human form of life one fails to worship you, he is most foolish, as stated in the verse beginning, Labdva. So in text 45, the absorption in one sentence, what's condemned is the absorption of the consciousness by Maya in simply family life, home life, which is causes misery. And it's 47th, 46th verse, and this is not the use of human life. A human being's life is meant for something different, on a different level. So continuing. Here in this field of fruitive work, avyangam means with undistorted limbs, which in the word by words means with, unlike the varieties of animal forms, that's the full manifestation of the limbs, just like a dog has, practically speaking, two arms and two legs, but he can't act with the sophistication that a human being can with his two arms and two legs, or even a monkey can't as well. What to speak of lesser mammals. So moreover, so he has this, he has the full expansion of intelligence in the body. The human body can store food, so he doesn't only within the body, because of the length of the intestines, it stores food for a long time, so he doesn't only and continuously have to think about eating. So there are periods of non-hunger, while animals don't have that, mostly. So it is such a gift, human life. And moreover, his mentality is absorbed in temporary sense pleasure. He's fallen into the blind well, which is his home, just as an animal impelled by greed for grass falls into a blind well, a covered well in the middle of the field, and once one falls in, he can call out and call out, but no one will hear him, because it's in the middle of the field. So first, 45th verse, focusing the mind, the expanded consciousness on something not that causes misery. Second, this is not the use of human life. And then 47th, he's lamenting, I've wasted all this time, O unconquerable one. But the unconquerable one has come to the cave because his devotee had been requesting him to have his association. So, and also again, he will come to the cave of the heart when that is our desire. And if we desire that, we can't desire what has just been condemned, the materialistic things. Because that will make whichever one desires, the other one will become weak. If one desires Krishna, naturally one's desire for material things will become weak. And if one desires material things, naturally one's desire for Krishna will become weak. So he's lamenting. Mukshakunda is, I have wasted all this time, O unconquerable Lord. So that Bhakta Vatsalya is conquered. The Lord is conquered, but by his devotees. But he's lamenting that he's not been a devotee. Becoming more and more intoxicated by domain and opulence as an earthly king. So power intoxicates. Misidentifying the mortal body as the self, one becomes attached to one's position due to the success and the pleasure. Whatever gives us pleasure, we become attached to. Misidentifying the mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, treasury, and land, I suffered endless anxiety trying to control all these uncontrollable things. Purport. Having in the previous verse condemned those who misuse the valuable human form of life for mundane purposes, Mukshakunda now admits that he himself falls into this category. And this is a good jump. The jump from what one is criticizing others about, to the point where one sees one is guilty of the same crime to even worse degree than others. Mukchakunda now admits that he himself falls into this category. He intelligently wants to take advantage of the Lord's association and become a pure devotee once and for all. Srila Srila Swami. So first verse of the prayer was condemning materialistic thinking. Second, this is not the purpose of human birth. And the third, I am guilty as charged, Your Honor. I am guilty of this. 47 comment of Srila Swami. And this is not only the destination of these people, those people out there, but mine also, as stated in the verse beginning, Mama Isha. Of him, me, who thinks the mortal body to be the self and who is therefore attached to children and so on. 48. With deep, and now what were the characteristics, the activities in my foolish, bewildered state? With deep arrogance, this is the first thing, pride. I took myself to be the body, which is a material object like a pot or a wall. It has no inherent consciousness. Thinking myself a god amongst men, I traveled the earth surrounded by my charioteers, elephants, cavalry, foot soldiers, and generals, disregarding you in my deluding pride. So pride, what that was Vidyadhara and Sankachuda, their faults were both pride, if you remember that chapter of the 10th canto a little bit earlier, chapter 34. Fault was pride. And they both got Krishna's mercy in a different way, in different ways. So 48. Srila Swami quotes, this exaggerated state of intoxication is described in detail in the verse beginning, Kalevare. Because I'm so badly deluded in relationship to this visible body, I consider this body myself. It is me. I look in the mirror and say, I am getting older. Or I am looking very beautiful today, or whatever. Or I don't look as old as I did yesterday, or whatever. This is all illusion, intoxication, because it is based on the false assumption that the body, which is as conscious as a pot or a wall, it is non-spiritual, like a pot or a wall, and therefore, because everything I do is based on that, and that's the, as Prabhupada said, compared to misidentification with the body, all other intoxications are like salt and pepper, just light spices on the real intoxication. And therefore, because of this intoxicated consciousness, all this time of mine has passed uselessly. Onward, 49. A man obsessed with thoughts of what he thinks needs to be done, intensely greedy, and delighting in sense enjoyment. So one is going on with all these important things of life in the pride of our accomplishments, our little kingdoms, and suddenly delighting in sense enjoyments that come along by our successes, suddenly he's confronted by you, who are ever alert, like a hungry snake licking its fangs before a mouse. You appear before him as the purport, and then we'll read Srila Srila Swami's comment. We may note here that the contrast between the words pramatam and apramataha, those who are trying to exploit the material world, apramata, deluded, bewildered, maddened by desire, But the Lord is apramatta, alert, sober, and unbewildered. In our madness, we may deny God or His laws, but the Lord is sober and will not fail to reward or punish us according to the quality of our activities. Srila Srila Swami comments. So everything is ruined, spoiled by our being kicked out by ever alert, unstoppable death. All our pride is crushed into fine powder. Srila Srila Swami comments. You overtake one who is disregarding you, as stated in the verse beginning Pramatam. Deluded, inattentive, disregarding you as the cause of his demise, inasmuch as he is attached to body and so on. How is he, Pramatam? This is answered by the words itri dritya tintaya, meaning with a succession of mental conjectures. How is he bewildered? By a succession, an ongoing stream of mental thoughts. Oh, this needs to be done, this needs to be done, and I have to do this. Icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena bharata. On and on and on. I want this, I have to do that, I don't want to do that, I have to stop this from happening. On and on and on and on. And what we don't know, that we are being stalked by an assassin who is always alert. And when one's desire is unfulfilled, one experiences hankering for sense objects. And when it's fulfilled, one's thirst only increases, trishna. You confront that person as his death. In other words, you overpower him, just as a snake licking its fangs in thirst overpowers a mouse. Very pleasing description, isn't it? What do you think? It's tricky in a sense, because if someone's a complete materialist, then they hear something like this and a light goes on inside, perhaps, and he leaves everything and goes to the forest, leaves his material life behind and goes to the forest. But we've already done that. Here we are sitting in the best of forests. But still, the tendency of this mentality, or rather there's a tendency to keep this mentality with us and have a list of so many things we have to do. And neglecting the real purpose of life is to learn how to love Krishna. So what do we do who tend to engage our particular modes of material nature that possess us as devotees and tend to engage that in Krishna service, but tend to also forget our impending death, and tend to also have so many things to do that we don't have time, and it's all service related, or very often it's service related. So what do we do? So this is one point. Obviously, there's so many things we should do. Not that we should can't give up our service, but we should do it as with the right consciousness. And keep everything in the right, correct perspective. And very much a sobering point in this is this kind of stark hearing of the philosophy that we heard so many times before, and then perhaps we only want to hear the chapters 29 to 33 of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, because we already know this stuff. But is the mind actually focused in the proper consciousness? So these points, not as dominant as in the fifth canto, not as dominant as in the third canto and the fourth canto. Fourth canto, where is it presented? These points that immediately bring renunciation to the heart. The forest of material enjoyment. And Paranjana, and then right after that, the deer who is drinking water very peacefully, and the hunter and the tiger are there. And then in the third canto, Kapila Munis, the actions of fruit of reactions, the force of time, going through a life cycle of a man who's engrossed in a very fast speed, and we see ourselves in that. So not as chapters and chapters and chapters and chapters, but here it's here, just to give us a little shake also. And Muchukunda is even saying this with Krishna right in front of him. So we should keep our death in front of us to keep our sobriety about the path. And we'll just read the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also to text 49. Because there's such a tendency, Maya is so strong, there's such a tendency to think that tomorrow will be just, today will be like yesterday and tomorrow will be like today. And it will go on like that forever. But it will not be. There'll be one day where tomorrow will be very, very different from, or rather today will be very different from yesterday. And we don't know which today it's going to be. And who is old and close to the time when they're going to leave the body, and who is younger, further? It's hard to say. This is not talk about the tech core. This is Burjan using terror tactics. But don't blame it on me, blame it on Muchukunda. Because it's just his points. Here is the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In the form of time, you devour those who do not worship you. That is the meaning of this verse. So let us worship Krishna, is the point. Muchukunda said, because of attachment to sense gratification, one becomes thoroughly deluded and inattentive and thus ignores you. Inattentive to what? The approach caused by time. Of the ending of one's life, inattentive to that, forgetful of it. Thinking that he must do certain actions in the world, one develops ever-increasing greed. Even though his desires are frustrated, he is still eager for those objects. You remain fully attentive as time, however, and confront that person as death to take away everything. As time, you act just like a snake, licking its fangs out of hunger before overcoming a mouse. So the mouse is wrapped in his coils of the snake, and he's being held tightly and can't do anything. And the snake is just looking at him, and he's licking his lips with his forked tongue before, something like that. So we don't want to be like that. Okay, we won't begin the next verse. Yeah, there's a few more in this series. Powerful. Unnervingly powerful. Okay, so why don't we stop here? Did you have a question? Or? Yeah.
That kind of problem is because before, now people are less inclined to defend their life.
Yeah.
It seems to be a step up for them to be actually attached to the family life.
Yes.
Nowadays, even women in many countries become less
interested. Well, we have to understand the purpose of it. The purpose is that one shouldn't be deluded by time, and one should devote one's time and energy to Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita also states the same point in the sense that you're hinting at, is that one shouldn't disrupt the minds of the What's the verse? Disrupt the minds of the ignorant. Rather, they should be, by telling them knowledge that's above them, rather one should engage them to work in work and works of devotion, in steady, dutiful work even. So, of course, we remember that this is in the 10th canto. It's not in the first canto. But it's a simple point in one sense, and it's not that it's a simple point. So if you're talking to a person who's I think a lot of devotees feel like that this type of renunciation could be overly preached and destroys, so people will use their tendency to be whimsical and point to these type of verses to justify their whimsy. I know there was this one morning walk where someone tried to do that with Prabhupada, and he was a fairly newly married man, and he said, "Prabhupada, you know, in a married life, you know, what should we do to preach, you know, something like that, you know, and if one finds the family is getting in the way," which means he was fighting with his wife, you know, something like that, "what happens if the family is getting in the way of one's preaching," or something like that. So Prabhupada, first he didn't answer, and then he pointed to Tamal Krishnaraj, and he said, "You answer." And he said, "You know, there's no bar in any form of household or life for preaching." And he said, "There are many preaching programs going on by householders and things like that." And then Prabhupada said, "You know, nonsense. Why are you trying to use Krishna in your service? In other words, why are you trying to use the philosophy just to do what you want to do, which is get rid of your wife, an unpleasing relationship with your wife?" So of course things can be misused, but obviously also in a mature way of preaching, one is careful not to do that. I mean, one could say the same thing in one sense about the in the Rasalila dance. You know, it sounds antiquated. You know, the gopis were so advanced that they left their husbands and had a paramour. You know, and you know nowadays people are thinking, well, what's the big deal about that? It's not an unbreakable barrier now like it was then. So things also have to be understood in the cultural context also, but you know, careful, mature preaching can be. And also if you walk into a library or a medical bookstore, you'll see unlimited books on medicine. So if you're going to just pick up a book and decide this is the treatment I'm going to take from the book, you'll obviously get yourself in trouble, because even a experienced doctor doesn't prescribe for himself. So one has to get a prescription from a doctor who has who understands all the medical books, and then he can take your pulse and see what prescription is exactly right for you. A personal prescription is just right for you. But one can't fault the medical books for telling the whole gamut of experiences that the medical sciences can treat. But yet there also is such a tendency in householder life. That's why divorces tend to be so acrimonious and so painful and so full of hatred, because there is such a binding in marriage, and two become one really tends to be like that. So therefore there is such truth in this. And the tendency of the false ego is just as he describes, and it will just take different forms. Instead of having one wife, but people will jump from one to the next, and they still want their kingdom, It's not that people nowadays, they said nowadays don't want their kingdoms. They want different kingdoms, but based on different modes of material nature. And then when it gets to the last two verses, how people can, the great king who's conquered the world, you know, he's controlled by his sex life. So, you know, that's certainly it's the disease of the Western world. And ever increasingly, in the starting with Bombay and Mumbai, and moving everywhere else, even in India too. Okay, let's stop here. Okay, if you're going to make a comment.
I was just going to make a comment.
Yes.
On this verse 49, that although I've been practicing to be a devotee, I still have that tendency to think, I know this needs to be done, and that needs to be done, and it has to be done, and it must be done. And I, instead of seeing that death is waiting from Krishna in the form of a snake with hungry fangs about to pounce in the mountains, I'm still thinking of the analogy that Krishna's going to take me like a mother cat takes a kitten, and I'm not seeing my tendency. And I'm not seeing my lack of resistance.
That's also also such a tricky point, because so many of this needs to be done and this needs to be done and this needs to be done has to do with service to Krishna too. But yet there's such a tendency to want to control everything oneself, and Krishna becomes a minor player in the whole thing and I'm the main star. And there's not really the It's work instead of seva. So, and I tried to mention that when I was speaking on that point, that the point is that not that we should be irresponsible in our service and all the different services, but they should be service, devotional service. They shouldn't be, oh, I need to do this and I need to do this and I need to do that. And I see this with myself, you know, every day. You know, there's such a long list of so many things that have to be done before I can eventually get to what really needs to be done. And practically speaking, I never get to what really needs to be done, because the list, no matter how much time you put into it, it never ends, rather it increases. So yes. But I just wanted to make, he's not speaking of, because again, in the first thing, it's really for materialistic men, but we tend to take our materialistic attitude with us. So, as aspiring devotees, so we have to adjust the concept a little bit, but not throw it out. Okay, so let's stop here. Should we begin again by asking who remembers something from the previous class? Oh, it's everyone's memory. Okay, I have another idea. Everyone think of something from the previous class. Don't say it, but just raise your hand when you've thought of something from the previous class. No? So I know that you've... Okay. You remember something? No, yeah, don't say anything. Just everyone's thinking of something.
Very good.
Moving on with it, I'll just give a quick review of those verses. Mushukunda explained that people bewildered by Maya tend to be fully absorbed in sources of misery. It's ironical in one sense. There's irony in it, because one would think that one becomes absorbed in that which gives one pleasure, and indeed one does, but it's the hope for pleasure and the actual promise of pleasure, but the actual result of unhappiness that comes from being absorbed in materialistic affairs, family affairs, etc. actually sources of misery due to their temporary nature. So this, despite having a human life, it's a very basic preaching, but spoken very strongly. Having a human life, people fall into this trap, and there's a tendency when one is in that trap of just family life, material life, is to forget all about the purpose of life. So then, after criticizing people who are like that, and the basic criticism is misidentification of the body, which is compared to having no more consciousness than a or a pot or a wall, not very conscious. And then Mucchakunda says that I am guilty of that myself, and I become so many attached to the things that give pleasure to the body, and therefore I'm continuously in anxiety. And then trying to make a secure position and achieve things for my body, with my body. I'm a king, I travel around, and I become very proud of whatever my accomplishment is. And then, obsessed in this way, I forget you, O Lord, who is pursuing me in the sense of time as death. Like a snake captures a mouse, I am caught, and it is just a matter of time. So despite my great, 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 quote, great triumphs, I am simply lost in this, within the coils of the snake of time, and my death is soon, immediate. And there I am, thinking myself so wonderful, but in fact, and such a controller, but I am controlled. Oh, that comes next. No, we're not up to that one yet. Here we are. We've done 49, now we'll go on to 50. Continuing. The body that at first rides high on fierce elephants or chariots, adorned with gold, proudly, and is known by the name king, is later by your invincible power of time called feces, worms, or ashes. Read the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami on this verse. So this is the inevitable end of the body, and such suffering comes due to our misidentification of the body to the self, as the self. Srila Sridhar Swami's comment. Moreover, the body which has been overtaken by you as time turns into the following, as stated in the verse beginning, Pura. Eaten by dogs, jackals, and so on, its name is stool. Uneaten by them, then its name is worms. And burned, its name is ashes. Thus, using our intelligence to discriminate, we should always understand that those who identify with such a material body and do not worship Hari are enemies of their own self, self-interest. Thus it is stated, those who, after passing through many thousands of species of life, finally with great difficulty obtain the facility of the human form, yet still do not worship Lord Vishnu, such persons are certainly enemies of themselves and of humanity. They are preaching naturally. They preach materialistic self-concepts and get others envious of them and entangled in a whole network of illusion. Onward. Having conquered the entire circle of directions and being thus free of conflict, so this shows the conquering king. So he's powerful. He sits on a splendid throne, receiving praise from leaders who were once his equals and who he has conquered. And now they are forced to praise him due to his position as the emperor or the king of kings. But, so everyone is glorifying him as he sits on his throne, the topmost, higher than everyone else. But when he enters the women's chambers, where sex pleasure is found, he is led about like a pet animal, O Lord. Completely controlled, the great controller, becomes controlled. The comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse. Not a long comment. The previous verse stated that a person who achieves kingly status amongst his peers, his equals, ends up as stool and worms by the force of time at the end of his life. So no one gives honor or praise to stool or worm. No one gives it honor. So that is the result of kingly honor, no matter how great our kingdom or small our kingdom is. This verse describes that even while living within the body, a king becomes a mere plaything in the hands of women, controlled. Having conquered his enemies, the king is worshipped by those who were once his equals, but in the private chambers of the queen is made to move about like a pet animal for sexual pleasure. Completely controlled. And then 52. A king who desires even greater power than he already has, strictly performs his duty, carefully practicing austerity and foregoing sense enjoyment. But he whose urges are so rampant, thinking I am independent and supreme, he cannot attain happiness. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains. The man who does not worship the Lord is condemned for his enjoyment of worldly pleasures. But the same man is also condemned even when he does not have sense gratification, as stated in this verse. Such a man is fixed in austerities, such as sleeping on the ground and observing celibacy with the urge to become an even more powerful king or even injure himself. So it almost sounded in that verse that he's not as bad as the one who's sensuously continually trying to be happy and conquer. So this person, he's not as bad temporarily, but ultimately he's exactly the same and the end is the same, completely condemned, because there is no worship of the Lord. So here is the materialistic path and the condemnation of it. We are all familiar with that. Now in 53 to 57, especially in 53, he'll speak about first a change of direction. And what causes the change of direction for a materialistic person, a soul whose consciousness is absorbed in materialistic endeavors? What causes the change of direction? So this is a often quoted verse, a very important verse. Perhaps the most famous verse in Mukmucha Kunda's prayers. And then what will happen after that, he's going to turn to what the Lord had actually asked him earlier. What boon do you want? What do you want? In text 43, the Lord asks, what do you want of me? I've come before you. You've wanted me to come before. You've desired to see me, to be in my association, praying in that way, life. For lifetimes, for a long time, and now I'm here. Well, what do you want? So he's not going to ask for anything foolish that can be also obtained by these materialistic methods that were condemned before. But before we get to that, what causes the change? So here's the verse, and then we'll read the commentary, the purport and the commentary of the Acharyas. Bhava pavago brahmato yada bhave janasyatar yachuta sat samagama satsangamo yarhi te daiva satkato paravareshe tvai jayate mati. Bhava, of material existence, apavarga, the cessation or liberation from material existence. So how does it come? How does this change of consciousness occur? Brahmata, for one who has been wandering, yada bhaved, it occurs. So the cessation of material existence Bhava apavarga brahmata, for one who has been wandering, occurs when janasyatarhi achutasatsamagama. For a person, it occurs for a person when, at that time, O infallible Lord, satsamagama, he gets saintly association. Satsangama. So satsangama in the next line too. Satsangama gamo yarhi tadaiva satkato. So it is then only when he gets only saintly association, it is only saintly association, then he goes on to say, that causes the cessation, that superior association causes the cessation of material existence and devotion. So here is the translation which accurately describes the verse. When the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, O Achyuta, he may attain the association of your devotees. So what what the acharyas speak about here very much is the cause and effect that's mentioned in this verse. So when your material life has ceased, then you get the association of devotees. So it seems from this verse, as it is stated, that the cause of the association of devotees is the actual ceasing of one's material life. Well, we know, in fact, it's the opposite. It's the association of devotees that cause the cessation of material life. So the acharyas will speak about this specific point. And when he associates with them, so when your material life, the verse appears to be saying, when your material life is finished, or in one sense you could say, when your notice has come that this is the end of your material life, your materialistic way of life, then one can attain the association of devotees. And when he associates with devotees, what happens? There awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees, unto you, whose service is the goal of the devotees and the Lord of all causes and effects. So two attributes are given to the Lord here, that the goal of the devotees is him, and he is the laws of all cause and their effect. So it's interesting that what the cause appears to be the cessation of material existence, and the effect is the association of devotees. But then again, he's directly saying that it is the Lord who's the Lord. What, there's no chance in his particular the nomenclature, there are so many ways to refer to the Lord, so he's referring to him as the Lord of all causes and effects. So in a sense he's saying that it's the Supreme Lord who's causing all this. Now let's read. So there's a cause and effect. So first cause, it's time for you to leave the material world, or it's in the past tense. Your material life has ended. Then you attain the association of devotees, and then devotion awakens. For who? For the Lord, who is the goal of the devotees and the Lord of all causes and effects. So here's the purport. And then we'll read Srila Swami's, Jiva Goswami's, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Acharyas Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti agree on the following point. Though I may just ask you what is the point they agree on, so listen carefully. Although it is stated here that when material life ceases, one attains the association of devotees, in fact, it is the association of the Lord's devotees that enables one to transcend material existence. Srila Jiva Goswami explains this apparent inversion, this turning around of sequence, by quoting the Kavya Prakash. Karya karyanos cha purva parar Vipario Vigayat Atisokti Syatsa. A statement in which the logical order of a cause and its effect is reversed should be understood as Atisokti, emphasis by extreme assertion. Srila Jiva Goswami cites the following commentary on the statement: Karanasya Sigra Karitam Vaktum Karyasya Purva Mukto. To express the swift action of a cause, one may assert the result before the cause. It's like when you get on the, if you got on a plane and it was so fast and it's going to immediately bring you right to Vrindavan. So you'd be thinking that you're getting to Vrindavan. That's the first thought. I'm getting to Vrindavan. Or going on the plane is the same as getting to Vrindavan because it's getting you there so fast. Well, or you could say going to Vrindavan is the cause of getting on the plane. Because it's a fact. Your desire to go on Vrindavan is the cause of getting on the plane. So this is called Atisokta, to express the swift. If something's going to happen very quickly, you can reverse the order. In this connection, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the merciful association of the Lord's devotees makes possible our determination to become Krishna conscious. And the Acharya agrees with Sri Jiva Goswami that this verse is an instance of Atisayokti. So Jiva Goswami points this out. Then Srila Srila Swami, that it's actually the devotees' association that causes the end of one's material life. So Srila Srila Swami says, having thus in the eight previous verses elaborated on the material life of those who are indifferent to the Supreme Lord, now he describes how this material cycle is stopped by devotional service in the verse beginning Bhavar Pavarga. My dear Achyuta, when by your mercy there occurs the end of the bondage of material life for a person who is wandering, cycling through birth and death, when that time comes, then there is the association of saintly persons. And when there is saintly association, one gives up all material association and thus develops devotion for you, the controller of both the phenomena of creation and their causes. Then it is implied he becomes liberated. Sri Jiva. Or else, Yadabhavet means when all-knowing authorities make it possible. At that time, saintly association is made possible by the discriminating spiritual authorities. So when Krishna is very, very kind and merciful, so it's time for you to have the chance to exit the material world. This is the methodology, Srila Jiva is saying, that he gives you the association of devotees, but our free will is intact still. But that association causes the blossoming of the desire to serve Krishna within the heart. It causes that blossoming, or the seed at least. And then one's taste begins to change. So it is just as though you're out by that association, that is Atisokta. It is just a matter of time, a quick time, especially when compared to eternity. It's over. So this is the greatest fortune. The greatest, greatest fortune. Despite the difficulties that may come in one's life, even after one becomes a devotee, it is not just, as probably we have experienced, it's not, you become a devotee and there's a tendency to think everything is going to go your way and all your wonderful desires to facilitate your life in Krishna consciousness and your plans will be fulfilled by Krishna's mercy just like that, but it doesn't work like that. But despite the difficulties that come, that may come, according to this very mysterious combination of Krishna's will and our own karma, or Krishna acting through our karma to purify us. Very mysterious things can happen in that. Very difficult things can happen, catastrophic on one level. But yet, despite those difficulties, it's just a quick matter of time before it's all over. Material existence and all the catastrophes, all the difficulties, all the anxieties wiped away. But that quick matter of time is not always according to our childish conception of time, which means like a child placed in a, if the child wants something and you say, oh, in 5 minutes, soon as we leave, I'll give it to you. And the child immediately starts crying because their conception, they don't have a conception of time. Developmentally, they don't have a conception of time. For them, 5 minutes seems like 1,000 years or 2,000 years. It's indeterminably long. So similarly, we have a childish conception of time. And for us, 15 minutes or 1 year or 5 years, or not 15 minutes perhaps, doesn't seem so long because we have a more developed conception of time. But 5 years seems like a long time, or 20 years seems like a long time, or a lifetime seems like a long time. But Brahma's life, from the point of view of the Bhagavatam, is like a flash of lightning over the ocean. And that's millions and billions of years of Brahma's life. So our conception of time and what is difficult and what is important and success is, from the spiritual perspective, from the perspective of eternity, quite childish, even though not quite as childish as the two-year-old's conception of time. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows. It may be questioned, when will bhakti, which destroys all suffering and bestows all bliss, appear? This question is answered in this verse. O Achyuta, Uchukunda said, when a wandering spirit soul's bondage and material existence is destroyed, bhavar pavaga, he gets the association of merciful sadhus. The word tadaiva means then and only then. In this verse, when and then are spoken in regard to a broad conception of time. In a more accurate description of time, it would be more proper to say that saintly association comes first and cessation of material existence comes afterward, since they are respectively the cause and the effect. However, because the effect happens so quickly, the effect is mentioned before the cause to emphasize the quickness. This is an example of the fourth type of extreme statement known as atisayokti, a statement in which the logical order of a cause and its effect are reversed, should be understood as atisayokti, emphasis by extreme assertion. The Vaishnava Toshini explained the word sadgato, of Srila Jiva Goswami, goal of the saintly. In him, this is how the words, here it's sadgato. Of the saintly, the goal of the saintly. The word sadgato, in him whose shelter are the devotees. This is shown in such a phrase as swechamayasya, I am subordinate to my devotees. Actually, everything Krishna does is initiated by the desire of his devotees. Therefore, his mercy is also dependent on the saintly devotees. In the phrase sadgato, it is implied that Krishna is not the gati, the goal, of those who are asat, temporary materialists. This means that Krishna's mercy can be received only when a succession of predecessor saints has been established. It did not arise all by itself sometime in the past. This point is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.31. O Lord, this is by the demigods, who resembles the shining sun. You're always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. The demigods are offering prayers, the garbha stuti, to Krishna, who is in the womb of Devaki. O Lord, who resembles the shining sun, so Krishna was so effulgent even within the womb, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. And therefore, you are known as Desire Tree. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. So Krishna's mercy follows the mercy of the devotees. That is the basic and main point. Because Krishna is subservient to his devotees. So therefore, Krishna's, the association of devotees comes first, and then the result of that, by Krishna's mercy, is the cessation of material existence, liberation from material existence, and the development of bhakti, and going home, back to Godhead. So first, it is the mercy of the devotee, the merciful devotees in disciplic succession. Any question or more comments about this point? An important point?
Sometimes we say, Yasha, Pasha, sometimes we say, because of the mercy of Krishna, we get the mercy of the devotee.
But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains very, very clearly in Madhurya Kadambini that it is the free will of the devotee. And Jiva Goswami speaks about this also in Bhakti Sundarbha, I believe, that the devotee, he has his free will. And it is by his free will, Krishna has empowered the devotee with his Kripa Shakti. And by his free will, that he distributes the mercy of Krishna. So that verse, Yasya Pasara Bhagava Pasara, so by the mercy of Krishna, one gets the devotee, one gets the mercy of Krishna. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it speaks about it a little bit differently. Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna, combined mercy of Guru and Krishna. Because there's no difference, that's the point. Because that is Krishna's mercy, he carries it. So then the question is, does Krishna inspire the devotee where to give mercy? So Jiva Goswami indicates it's actually the free will and Vishwanath. Because otherwise, for a tattva reason, because otherwise the Lord will be accused of partiality. Which is considered childish. So it's put to the free will of the Madhyam Bhakta, not even the Uttama Bhakta, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, so that the Lord doesn't get accused of the whimsy of partiality. But actually, my understanding is that there's no difference, really, between the desire of the devotee and the desire of Krishna. But yet his free will is there. And also in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, describes that janmano punya karmanam yesham twantadaka papam jananam punya karmanam, that he's attracted. The commentators describe how the devotee is attracted to the piety, the punya of someone, and then he gives his mercy, his merciful association to those persons. But then we see in the behavior of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, that if they waited for the punya karmanam of people, there would be anyone. And that was Nityananda's argument. If you kill everyone who's offensive, like you want to kill Jagamata, there won't be anyone to save. You're offensive and nasty and sinful. And you've come to save the most fallen. Patita Pavana Hetu Tavavata. So it's a subtle and tricky point, but it's a wonderful point.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it mentions that the Lord is more kind than the Lord, and he knows the Lord's mode, purpose.
In giving Bhagavad Gita classes.
Eh?
In having open classes for the Bhagavad Gita. For example.
So it seems like, just my understanding of that is that the devotee has free will, but it seems like he knows the mood of the Lord, the mind of the Lord, and therefore he acts accordingly. Is that true?
So then, since the mind of the Lord is not different from the Lord, so one would say it's the Lord's inspiration that makes him act. So Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur chooses, and Jiva Goswami too, to put it actually on the free will of the devotee. The devotee is glorified. And that's the tendency for the Lord to glorify the devotee. And the devotees to say, I haven't done anything, it's all you. And then the Lord says, I haven't done anything, it's actually you. This is who we are dealing with and the kind of souls we are dealing with. Supreme souls and supreme merciful souls.
No, these classes will be over in about 2 weeks.
No, in about three days.
2 days.
Three, I think, as far as I can figure.
How do we get good sadhu sangha?
The book. So many lectures available nowadays, but the Bhagavatam is there. To what degree we accept. To some degree it's free will, but to some degree it's fortuna gyata sakriti. Because free will means our desire.
It's very interesting what you described about the time lag in our childish perception of time. And we can say that if somebody is disturbed by this time lag, probably he wasn't surrendered enough, so therefore time lag is justified. And if somebody is not disturbed by a time lag, then he's not disturbed, and there's no problem. So if one is disturbed, it means he still has some attachments that need to be given up or renounced or purified. But sometimes, therefore Krishna connects expertly in providing this time and circumstances for the person to change. Sometimes some devotees ask a question, but cannot Krishna purify me all at once? Here I am, I want to come to Krishna now. So Krishna is...
And I might not in 5 minutes, so he might as well purify me now.
So he's all powerful. So why doesn't he just, make me...
Well, Jiva Goswami, in Bhakti Samhita Sindhu Nectar Devotion, his comment on why Bhava Bhakti is Dolabha, so Dolabha. He says it's very, very powerful, Bhava Bhakti. And it's so powerful that it controls the Lord. So he will give it only to those he wants to give it to, because it is so powerful. So what he does, he makes it very hard to get. But not so hard that we shouldn't even bother trying to do it. But he holds himself back in order to increase the enthusiasm of the person. This is the basic points. So if we're the kind of person that if I don't get what I want immediately, I completely lose my enthusiasm, then we're not the kind of person who Krishna is going to trust with giving this exalted consciousness. But if we're the kind of person who it's intolerable that we don't get it immediately, and it just becomes more and more intolerable for us, and our desire simply grows and grows, and we're going to hear about such a person in the very next chapter. And that person is Rukmini Devi. And her letter to Krishna, which is also very often quoted, this one verse is about that. There's one verse specifically about that point. That I'm willing to wait, but it won't be in this life that I'm going to wait. I'm going to perform austerities, and then it might take 100 lives or whatever, birth after birth, but I'm just going to keep on performing austerities until I achieve your association. Because there's our desire, but my dear child, it is not only your desire that makes the world go round. It is also the desire ultimately of the Lord, of Krishna. So you can do what you want and desire as much as you want, but no matter how much you desire, it is necessary, but it is insufficient to make something happen. Everything depends on causeless mercy in this realm. No one has the price for this one. When you want a toy in the toy store, you can cry and throw a tantrum, and your mother may get so embarrassed, she'll open up her wallet or whatever and take out, oh, people used to have wallets. I guess they carry their credit cards in their wallets still. Just pull out their credit card, and okay, you got it. So you were successful by your tantrum. So you did it, but you can't do that with Krishna. Or you can do it, but how he responds to you is up to him. And therefore his mercy is causeless, which means that it depends only on his disposition and not upon anything that we do. So devotees, they make it their expertise to know the science of attracting Krishna's mercy. But yet, it's dependent on Krishna's causeless mercy, nevertheless, only and nevertheless. So there's serious practitioners who say, I can't wait long, you know, like the residents of Vrindavan, they don't say, okay, Krishna, how long ever it takes, never mind, before you come back. And Rukmini Devi. And then there's the non-serious practitioners who say, you know, I'm not... I've read that people who are serious are... that they're supposed to be very greedy and lobby, so therefore I am also like that, so then they imitate. But it doesn't last because it's an imitation. And then there are people who are not serious who don't even last. Yeah, because when we say, if we say to Krishna, I want you and I want nothing else, I want now, so there is a tendency, from what I've noticed, for Krishna to say, oh really? You only want me? Well, let's see. Because why should he give the most valuable thing and place it in a dirty pot? Or one who knows, looking at it from a different point of view, one who knows the value of the thing Why would they keep a dirty pot to put it in? Okay, let's continue. Is there any more on this?
I'm just wondering how, in that verse where it says that, you know, we get the association of devotees after we've given up material life.
With the meaning of that,
yeah,
as our acharyas explain.
And
Jiva Goswami.
It seems like, how did Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura come to that conclusion? Obviously, you know, he's got spiritual vision. Is that all it is, that he, you know, is inspired by Krishna? Or
no, he knows the philosophy. But if you read what... Yeah.
I just wanted to say this. Atisayokti is a figure of speech in Sanskrit poetry.
Yes.
We studied that at the Bhakti Vedanta College.
Yes.
And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura surely was acquainted with all these figures of speech. So, therefore it's mentioned. But here we have the cause and the effect. The effect comes before the cause.
Mentioned before.
So that's a kind of exacerbation, showing that this happens immediately, in a very short time. It's a kind of exacerbation.
Yes.
And
so in other words, because you've studied from the point of view of literature,
yeah.
He knows that it's used many times. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura isn't just making it up to justify what he wants to say philosophically.
Yeah. So there are many figures of speech. We studied Rupaka, Upreksha, Prantima, and then we have Atisayokti. Atisayokti is an hyperbole of an exaggeration, and in that sense it means...
Hyperbole?
An hyperbole.
Yeah, hyperbole. Hyperbole.
Hyperbole.
That's the...
Yeah, hyperbole.
Sorry. I recognized it.
Yeah.
So he's saying that was the actual meaning that's attendant. Now, Sridhar Swami, he more or less... He says it a little bit differently, but it's not very, very different. He says that when the higher powers, if I've understood it properly, the higher powers say it's time for it to end for you, he places you in the association by the grace of God, you get the association of a devotee. And then it happens. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
But which explanation is most inspiring to you?
Well, that last one you mentioned seems to a little bit like Brahmana Brahmati and Bhagavanji Guru Krishna Prasad.
That, you mean Srila Swami? It seems. But Srila Jiva Goswami, in those other examples I gave you, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura and Madhurya Kadambini, he puts the spiritual impetus in the free hand of the devotee. Because the problem when you put it in God's hands, then why everyone is a son of God, why is he discriminating between one person and another? That's the philosophical problem that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura has addressed in Madhurya Kadambini. Because if God does that, the Supreme does that, and then it's whimsy. He's showing favoritism, right? And he's not allowed to do that. But the devotee is allowed to use his free will as he likes. That's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura and Madhurya Kadambini resolves this philosophical question. Do you like his resolution?
I've never been able to understand it, that is. I've always had not been able to quite accept it, because it seems to be an open-ended thing.
It seems to be what?
It seems to be not quite fully explained, you know, because it's a samoham sarvabhuta issue that, you know, Krishna reciprocates when somebody's, you know, is there to reciprocate with everybody
equally,
which dependent on the attitude of the individual also. So that seems to conflict with
No, but why will someone have the desire to take up devotion? If you have the desire, that Krishna will reciprocate with that, but where does that desire come from? That's the question. That desire, or that taste, is, we could say, is the bija, bhakti lata bija. Where does it come from? Where does that impression come into the consciousness from?
Yeah, from the devotees.
Well, that's the point.
Four types of people begin to render. So when a person becomes convinced that, you know...
But what causes them to become convinced? Or what causes even a slight desire to enter his heart? Is it Krishna or is it the devotees? That's the question.
The
creation is insufficient because this bhakti has nothing to do with the material creation.
No, but it's like the preliminary inspiration for taking to bhakti. The material world gives you so much suffering.
No, this is clearly described by our acharyas. No matter. Because you see, there's so many people who suffer. It's not only the devotees who have taken to Krishna consciousness because of their suffering, but there are so many people who are suffering and turned to be mass murderers or communists. This is right from the Bhagavad Gita. So what causes the difference? It's not suffering. Once you get the seed or the concept or the idea, then the suffering is an impetus, but it's suffering in and of itself cannot do it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying that the whole process that Krishna set up is to make us try and enjoy this material world, but to realize at some point that it's a waste of time. And I'm just thinking that at that point,
but you're
ready for hearing.
But that's the point that you want to make, but what I want to make includes that point. The point that I would like to make is that it's the devotees that do it. And even if you're not ready for hearing, that's only one of the reasons that someone comes. A devotee can pierce the heart anyway, with only not freedom from suffering, but sweetness. A whole different concept of what reality, what life, what existence, who you are, is placed in the heart. You're a servant of Krishna. It's the devotee who does it. It's not the material world. That's the point.
So what's that? The devotee's mercy on an individual.
Huh? Say that again?
Is that the devotee's mercy on another individual?
And it is freely given compassionate mercy. And Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur goes as far as to say it's done by the Madhyam Bhakta.
But is that free will of the devotee or is that Krishna's arrangement?
Well, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami answer the question very clearly. It's the free will of the devotee.
Which devotee?
Of the devotee who did it.
The devotee who's aspiring or the devotee who's giving the mercy?
Giving the mercy.
Argue?
Don't argue with me. Argue with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. Go ahead, mate.
I was stopped by the body in the streets of Canberra, in Australia. And why he didn't stop the person who was walking beside me?
Okay, say that again.
Well, I was stopped by one devotee, the Prabhupada disciple, in the streets of Canberra.
Yes.
Why he didn't stop that person who was walking beside me?
But did he try?
Well, I wasn't aware at the time he was trying.
Well, that's so ask him. But usually the devotees don't look for just, oh, this person I'm going to take. But even if they do that, that's their free will.
Of
Who they want to show their compassion to, is that's what free will means. You may not like this person. Something about him, maybe wants you to make him avoid him. That's your free will.
So what is that statement that not abiding grass moves without the arrangement of the Lord? Then that free will can be argued as being the arrangement of the Lord.
It can be argued in that way, but Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that this is not what's happening in this case. Because blades of grass are, it's mechanically, it's all done in a mechanical way, and there's no free will involved. But this is something very, very different. That means that a devotee has the ability to be compassionate. And usually what happens in the case that you just described, he's trying to distribute something to everyone, but someone will take advantage of it. And then he'll be able to give that person. But his desire is everyone.
But then again, the many people may have been stopped by that particular devotee. Then what makes that one like myself took it up and another didn't?
But there's receptivity, but that's not what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the compassion of giving.
So that
you still have your free will. The person on the other end still has his free will. But just the free will without the person giving it, like someone's giving away $1 million to everyone, say. But without that person giving $1 million, the fact that everyone desires $1 million or $1 billion now, it's not enough. You have to have the person who's giving it. That he's the more essential ingredient. Yes?
When talking about sankirtan, once Prabhupada made the comment that, you know, everybody was saying that not everybody will take, and he said that Prabhupada said that Krishna may not want them to take.
When you're asking for a donation, he said specifically that was that instance, Mayapur, 1976.
Yeah, so it's. So
that means that Krishna hasn't given him the position. Yeah, the power.
So that puts the onus on Krishna's mercy.
But Prabhupada was... But the devotee, just understand, that the devotee is the one giving. It's his compassion that's taking place. How people reciprocate with that is something else.
And what Prabhupada seems to be saying, though, is that...
But just understand what I'm saying. That you're saying, where does it come from? And the answer that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gets, it's the mercy of the devotee. That's the answer he gives. And Prabhupada wanted the devotees, he was talking to the devotees in the Mayapur 1976 Gopanima festival, and he was telling them, don't be so attached. That you do your part, and then the rest is between them and Krishna, which is still true. It's still true that people have their free will. Free will means between them and Krishna, how they react to it. But without someone saying, here, please take this. Here's the spiritual world, take it. Without someone saying that, your use of free will has no meaning. Because you'll just freely choose so many things of the world of Maya.
I understand that point.
Yeah, so what other point is there?
I'm still harping on that same point that if Krishna from within says, don't give him a donation, it can be far, you know, it says that, you know, we forget Krishna because we desire.
But what's the question? Never mind what your point is, but what's the question that point is addressing?
Is that it seems to be that Krishna...
What's the question that your point is addressing?
I'm just making it's not necessarily a question, it's an observation of what I've read in Chester. And I'm just putting this forward because it's...
But are you putting forward as a question?
Sorry?
Are you putting forward as a question to me?
I'm putting it forward for you to...
So if it's a question to me, then put it as a question. So ask it as a question, so it's easier for me to direct it then.
All right. So if Prabhupada was made that statement that Krishna is super soul within, dictates to one person, don't give a donation, Krishna stepped in on the free will, on the mercy of the devotee giving. Because he's actually not allowed and that mercy to be independent.
So you can't take one statement and judge everything by that one statement. You have to have read all the medical literature. And you have to take that statement and put it in the context of all the other things, including what was going on at that particular time. And the rest of the part, the rest of that lecture even. He was telling them, don't be attached. Don't think it all depends on you. That's the point of what he was making. When you go to someone and you ask them for a donation and they don't give, because when you're attached, what happens?
They sense that mood.
But aside from that, but what happens to you when you become attached? You become discouraged. So, and Prabhupada was, there was something going on that Prabhupada wanted to address. But it wasn't this point about where does the mercy come from. Now, do you think why would Krishna tell someone no? Do you think there's a why would Krishna tell someone no? Don't give a donation. Don't take a book. Don't chant Hare Krishna.
Because he's not favorable to go back to God. He still wants to enjoy his
work. Okay, so say if that's true. So does it have to do with Krishna then, or the person?
The person.
So it's not Krishna again. So it's not Krishna who's not allowing him to go back to Godhead, even taking that point of view.
In Bhagavad Gita...
But even, and take it even another way, that if even if the person says, here's something about Hare Krishna, please take it, and the person says, I don't want anything about Hare Krishna, go away. So Krishna's not letting him give because he's, say, for one reason or another, do it as impiety and aversion or whatever. But yet he said Hare Krishna. So the compassion of the person is going to dominate eventually anyway. See, the point doesn't go to who takes it. The point is going to... There's something from above coming. And is the question isn't about the taking, it's about the giving. That's the question. And you're taking it from the point of a different question. But the point of the giving, the question is the giving coming from just by the mercy of the devotee and his free will, or is Krishna making him choose who to give it to? That's the question. We're not talking about the taking. That's the question that's being addressed. So if you have a question about that, consider it. We're not talking about the taking. We're talking about Krishna's mercy coming. Is Krishna inspiring it, or is the devotee inspiring it? Which comes first? When Krishna says it's time for you to exit the material world? Or is it the devotee's free will? That's the question. Out of his kindness, out of his compassion. That's the question that's being addressed. Not the one that you're going over in your own mind. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Acharyas do at times say different things, as you should have noticed that already. They have different opinions for one reason or another. But they want to say that the devotees are very, very kind, and it is just coming from the goodness of their heart and their compassion and their desire to help others. So if you want to say it's not really the devotees who are kind, it's Krishna, the Supreme Lord, who is doing it, you can say that. But you don't really want to say that, so why say it? And the devotee isn't going to say, yes, it's correct, it is my mercy. The devotee is going to say, I'm just servant of my spiritual master, or it's Krishna's mercy, or something. He won't take the credit himself. But our acharyas want us to see who to thank, so to speak. If you're thirsty on the desert, and someone undergoes hardship to give you some water, you could also say, well, if it wasn't for God, you know, He made it rain up in some mountain far away, so thank you, God. And then forget the hand that's extended to you. Do you think that's appropriate? So therefore, it's emphasized, the hand, because it's the free will of the devotee that's doing it. He's undergoing the trouble. It's not fun, maybe, to help someone. Maybe it isn't fun at all. Maybe it's really difficult. Maybe he doesn't even like the austerities, but he's doing it out of his compassion. And then if we just turn and say, oh, it's God's grace, in a subtle way, it's an offense. Not seeing the kindness that's been, the difficulty that the person's gone through to give you what you're getting. Ingratitude or something. So therefore, because you could also say, you know, using the same argument, you could say, well, I can't understand it because in the Brahma Samhita it says sarva karana karanam, the Krishna's the sarva karana karanam. So it's just Krishna who's doing it, obviously. And you could say the water, if Krishna didn't cause the water and the rain and combine the hydrogen and the oxygen, and if one wants to put together such a tattva argument, and you know, over intellectualized, and miss the, then one will completely miss the rasa of the situation, the sweetness of the situation, the compassion, the affection. But that's the question that's being discussed. That it's the devotees that bring devotion, and therefore the exiting of the material world. Because it's, the way it's stated is when your material existence is ceased, so what causes the cessation of your material existence? Huh? That's the point. What do you think?
Still, we can also acknowledge Krishna's very personal presence in such accounts. When if Krishna sees someone has a desire to become free from samsara.
Well, there's so many people who desire to become free from samsara,
he sends
they take to jnana yoga.
Huh? He sends his devotee to this person.
That's the way that you would like to look at it. But that's not the way that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur likes to look at it. He wants to look at it as the free will of the devotee.
Yeah, this also, but not without the Lord's
hand. That's how you would like to look at it. But that's not how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur likes to look at it. He wants to look at it as just simply the kindness. And what is he carrying? He's not saying God doesn't, Krishna doesn't have anything to do with it, but the giving to this soul of that mercy is coming in the hand of a devotee. What is that mercy? It's Krishna's Kripa Shakti. But if it wasn't for that devotee, you wouldn't have it. That's the point that he makes in Madhurya Kadambini.
Krishna is naturally all over this country. One who introduced Krishna consciousness to them, they are very loyal throughout their life. Even though
you haven't been in the West yet. Yes, everyone. There's always, if you could ask everyone in this room, and we could do that, who was the person who introduced you to Krishna consciousness? Raise your hand if there was a person involved. Well, even if it was a book, okay, it was a person. You know, there was a Prabhupada who pushed the book distribution or whatever. There's always a person there. So that person will say, you know, mercy of Prabhupada, mercy of Krishna, that I was able to do something. But Krishna doesn't want that. He wants to say, you, I want to give you the credit. So then you ask, well, which really is it? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami say, it is really the free will of the devotee. They state this as clearly as I just said it. What's the word? Swats? Yeah. The free will means causeless. Freedom means causeless. I want to do it. Why? Because I want to do it.
So if the devotee is in the mood of depending on Krishna to direct him, then that's also a mercy. Krishna can direct him.
But he could be happy. Just understand. He could go home and just be happy and chant Hare Krishna all the time. Why be such an impersonalist in the name of glorifying Krishna? Obviously.
Krishna doesn't discriminate. Oh, okay, this I will make it.
Yeah, that's the point that Vishwanath is making. Because otherwise, this is on the tattva side. If you point it to Krishna and you say, well, Krishna's not letting this person give a donation, and Krishna's not letting this person chant Hare Krishna, and this Krishna's not doing this, then he's guilty of discriminating, and he's not allowed to be guilty of discriminating because he's the father of all living entities and the world will serve everyone. That's the point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes. He'll be accused, can be rightly accused of whimsical behavior. But the Madhyam devotee, who Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, allows in his explanation in Madhurya Kadambini, freedom of will and choice like that, he can discriminate. He's allowed to. I want to. I wanted to give this person. I want to be merciful to this person. And who he's merciful to, he's willing to be merciful to so many people according to who he is. And who reciprocates with him is a different question. And how they reciprocate, it's a different question. But that's not the question that's... And why they reciprocate the way they do, that's a different question. It may be a good question, but it's not the question that's being discussed here. So, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes... You get into a philosophical problem if you put it all on Krishna. Because he's not allowed to say, I like this one and I don't like this one. And we see this with devotees. you know, some people like this kind of, you know, like to preach to this kind of devotee, and some people like to preach to that kind of devotee, and some people like to preach to this kind of devotee. And can you tell them they're not allowed to do that? You know, some people, I know one devotee who had a dream. The Prabhupada told him, always surround yourself with university students. So does that mean he's, you know, he's... And then there are people who have their inspiration, the prison ministry, you know, completely different. And there's other people, who, you know, like this. And you know, so Krishna has his own way of working, but there's the free will of the... And therefore, combining all together, we have something very substantial. When I saw, yeah, even Mahaprabhu, he said that about Rupa Goswami. He said, when he was recognized by Rupa Goswami, was recognized by Surup Damodar as having obtained the mercy of Mahaprabhu. He said, yes, I gave it to him at this time in this place. So Rupa Goswami was very qualified. Anyway, I don't know if this has satisfied anyone, but it's probably the best I could do on the topic. And everyone's free to take it as they like. You know, because I also know that if a point hasn't satisfied one or hit a point where it fully answers the question, there's nothing you can do. You know, you have to wait. Or, you know, of another explanation or another way of explaining it or a deeper way of understanding your own point that includes the other point, something can happen. Any other questions or comments on this?
It's a comment by, like, Krishna way, he didn't kill Katayavana directly. Actually, I have said, I thought, I don't know whether it's correct or not, because he's the son of Kargacharya. He will be avoided. Not that it can be. I don't know this.
Interesting. Thank you. Yes?
Regarding at this point, when I ask a question, doesn't a devotee, and I have an answer from Jiva Goswami, doesn't a devotee wish everybody to be blessed by Bhakti? So if it's all up to a devotee to wish, then doesn't the devotee wish that everyone be blessed with Bhakti? So Jiva Goswami discusses this with regards to Prabhupada Maharaj and says that there are unlimited jivas and unlimited number is inconceivable. So therefore, however many jivas Prabhupada Maharaj knew, remembered, or could think about, or could conceive about, then that many would be liberated because he requested
them. I know that part. Yes.
And the rest, Nisimhadev himself says that if they want, they will be blessed by hearing your glories.
Mm.
So then they will also be free.
Yeah. Let me just think of something now. It's not another. How did you start what you said?
If it's all up to a devotee, then doesn't a devotee wish everyone to be free in the devotional service? That's the question that can be asked.
Oh, yeah. And also in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, one can all ask a similar question. About that, about there are demons, right? So Krishna says, "Tanaham dushita kuran samsareshu," that I send them down to hell, these demons. So one can ask the question, well, isn't he all merciful? So why doesn't he just purify them? And why does he have to send them to hell? Why doesn't he just purify them? And the answer is,
they suffer by, they want to. No Krishna in non-devotees, so they are actually happier too.
But there's one other part is that he doesn't have the inspiration to do that. He's also a person. People, Yayatamam, they are averse to him, and he says, he turns his back. He doesn't make himself visible. Atheists see all the arguments for their atheism right with their intelligence. But the devotee, who pointed this out right in the beginning, knows the purpose of the Lord. So he may turn their back on him, but the devotee doesn't. So he pushes through that yayetam mam prapadyante. Because the rest of that verse is samaham savabhuchetu name dveshastina priya ye bhajanti. So Krishna treats everyone equally, and that equally is yayetam mam prapadyante. I give them what they desire. But for the devotee, he treats them specially. But the devotee, knowing the desire of Krishna and wishing to please Krishna, he can push through the point of yayetam mam prapadyante and put it right in their hands, in their heart, as much as he has the capacity to, despite their unwillingness. Well, Krishna won't do that. He doesn't have the inspiration. I don't want to take these people and purify. Because one could, if you could say, well, the whole thing rests on Krishna. Why doesn't he just, and sometimes I admit to thinking like this, why doesn't he just like make it easy, really easy, and like bring us, you know, just take everyone home? But Krishna follows the, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's point, he follows his devotees. And when Vasudeva Datta wanted to do that, Krishna did it. But otherwise, he doesn't have the inspiration himself to do that, because he's just giving people what they want. He's the super soul in that way, but he intervenes for the devotees. So when the devotees carry the Kripa Shakti, the compassionate energy of Krishna, and they undergo great hardships, like Thakur Haridas, like Lord Jesus, so many devotees, just to help others, because they know, and it is their free will. Yes, they know what Krishna wants, and they're responding to that, but that's their free will. When I was in Japan with Prabhupada, and I can't remember, it was in Meguro-ku or something like that, and the temple was out in the middle of the woods somewhere in an unpopulated area, and it was so cold. And Mangalarti Prabhupada was in his chatter, and I was there, during Mangalarti, and cold smoke was coming out of our mouth, not smoke, but the condensed. And Prabhupada just looked at me and said, "It's so cold, isn't it?" So what I understood from that little incident, I really saw that. Wasn't like Prabhupada was a mechanical person. Just, I'm doing what Krishna wants, and I don't experience the cold and the heat and the, there's no like or not like involved. He didn't like the cold, but yet he was there anyway. Yes, ultimately Krishna, the order of disciplic succession, but Prabhupada was there behind it all, and you could say that. But it was Prabhupada's desire and his, you'd have to say his unlimited desire, fire, to spread Krishna consciousness. It was him. And you could say, okay, that, you can put Krishna back in. It wasn't Prabhupada, it was Krishna. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it's the devotee. And Krishna, and he says it here too, that my inspiration follows the devotee's inspiration. He aswatantra. I am not independent. He says to Durvasa Muni, you have to ask him. Ambarish Maharaj, I am not independent. I am not independent. I am Bhaktavatsal. I follow what my devotee wants. My devotee, she ties me up with ropes around my udara. Otherwise, he's a dictator. And You know, if everything is just resting on him, and he's created it, the whole thing, so that everything rests on him, and he set up the system. So no one's, but that's not Krishna. That's some other concept of God. But Krishna is Bhaktivatsalya. He Aswatantra. I'm dependent. I'm not independent. I'm dependent on my devotees. His mercy follows the devotee's mercy. So it's wonderful, yes? Or you can say, well, what causes a devotee to be merciful? And, you know, it's ultimately it's Krishna. He's the cause of all causes. But that's not what Lord Narayan says. It's not what Vishwanath Chakrabarti says. They want to place it in the hands of the devotee. That's good. Okay, let's end. So tomorrow we'll finish this chapter, Krishna willing. It's an interesting verse. I mean, you know, the points on the, you know, it's Krishna. It's not like it's a bad point or anything like that. It's a wonderful point. It's a wonderful point. And then tomorrow we'll hear the rest of his prayers and find out what he's saying. It's taking the mercy of the devotee to cause this turnaround in the material consciousness that he so graphically described. And then what? What does he want now that his consciousness is turned? What does he want? Interesting. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Mukunda ki jai, Lord Krishna ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai.